Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, diarrhea!
It's time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7, The Game. Come on.
Good morning, and a happy Tuesday to all of you 5 a.m. people out there. You think LeBron's going to have Taco Tuesday, Anna, today? Seems like he's going through a little much.
Yeah, I think he's got other things he's focusing on right now.
Yeah.
Maybe he, I don't know. Maybe go eat, maybe just enjoy some little tacos. Just make something, make light of things right now.
Ever since losing that patent, I don't think LeBron's ever going to eat tacos on a Tuesday again.
You shouldn't after, I mean... Who tries to just patent Taco Tuesday? That thing's been around for so long.
I don't know.
You can't do that.
Michael Jackson tried to patent Happy Birthday in the 80s.
Well, the song... Okay, so the Happy Birthday song, I remember that whole copyright issue. I think that limit came out where you weren't supposed to sing the Happy Birthday song. That's why at restaurants, they wouldn't sing that song because apparently you can get sued or fined or whatnot. And then now, like, the 100-year mark had been lifted or whatnot, so now you can sing it. At restaurants.
So you know, it's weird. Are we ever going to move on from that? On from singing Happy Birthday, the song?
No, you shouldn't. Enjoy it.
I think we should.
Why? What do you want to do? I said, hey.
Just not sing anything.
Why not? Because you love seeing hearing people sing
it's,
off.
It's awkward. It's weird. You don't know which name to use. And by the way, we will talk sports in a little bit.
You don't know whose name to use?
Yeah. Like, what if you,
whose birthday party are you going to?
Well, I don't
know. Random birthday parties?
Nah, just to, like, people maybe you might not know. Like, say you're just, like, a random friend who is going to, like, your friend, say, invites you to, like, their aunt's birthday or something like that. Like a random person who you don't really know, who you're not close with. You're just there at the birthday party. Then you're just singing happy birthday. Then you're just like, happy birthday to, I don't know what to call this person.
Just don't say anything. Just mouth the name. Just happy birthday to.
I think we should move on from the happy birthday.
You are weird for saying
it's
that.
It's 2019.
Seriously? No, keep on singing it and add the cha-cha-chas like I do every time.
Oh, no, you're not that person.
Yes. Oh,
you're
every
not
time.
That person.
Every time.
You're not that person
it.
Who
sings.
Don't even. You're not that person who starts singing the Channel 4 and Many More at the end.
Channel
like,
4.
Whatever it is. Channel 4, 2.
Channel 2 is Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Channel 9 is Frankenstein.
Yeah, okay. So you are that person.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm that corny person. I've always been that way. My dad is one of the corniest people you will ever meet, and I am just like him. I love pirate jokes. I love my kid tells knock-knock jokes.
Right.
Loves Fozzie Bear from the Muppets.
That's all fine. That's all well and good. I'm just saying the happy birthday thing. We need to move on from the happy birthday thing. Okay.
By the way, from the 925, did you guys feel the earthquake? I did not last night. My husband did, though. He was working last night out in Pacheco.
Yeah.
So he was right near the epicenter. And he said that he felt it rumbling and heard it last night. I didn't feel it though. Did you?
So I went to bed early last night, and early for me, I guess, is 9 o'clock at night. And I fell asleep around 9, and then I don't know why I randomly woke up at like 10:20 or something like that around there. I don't know why. I was kind of shocked that I actually woke up at that time. And then a couple of minutes later, I start to feel the earthquake going on. And I live in Livermore, so it really wasn't crazy. Like, I felt worse. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I did end up feeling it last night. And, of course, the thing I do immediately is check to Twitter.
Yep.
And just like I think singing the happy birthday song is super corny, tweeting about an earthquake is incredibly corny.
The worst is you see every earthquake.
Earthquake!
And then exclamation mark. Retweets, likes. It's like, really? Are we retweeting that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know there was an earthquake. I mean, I wrote something. I didn't feel it.
Yeah.
Felt it, sure. But if you just write the word earthquake, it just like, really? That's it? Can't you be a little more creative? 4.7, yeah.
Yeah, hopefully everyone is safe from the earthquake, yeah, just in case. We're not, you know, making fun of it or anything.
No,
but
not at all.
With the earthquake, though, I did get reminded of one time in high school when there was an earthquake. I went to high school over in Fremont, and I was in a big room. It's not like a regular classroom, right? Not just with like lights that are kind of built into the ceiling. It was a big classroom, and it was like the old wood shop, and they had lights that were dangling. And also, it wasn't just a normal like classroom with just one door. On the opposite side of the classroom, there's like a big like garage type door. Because it's like it was a place where like people move their trucks inside so they can move stuff in for wood shop and stuff. So they had like deliveries and all that. So they had a big garage door that they could drive trucks into so they can make deliveries. And that garage door, I remember the lights started dangling, mm-hmm, and the garage door started flailing. I didn't do the whole, hey, you need to get under your desk, put your hands over your head, and you gotta get under the desk and do that and do the earthquake drill thing.
Right.
I just instantly got up, screamed, and ran out.
You just ran in circles.
And quite frankly, no, I didn't run in circles. I ran out of the classroom into the open where I felt most safe, because I'm not going to sit with these skinny ass desks and I got lights dangling from the ceiling, yeah, possibly that are going to fall down. And then I also got a garage door that's flailing like crazy and making all these noises. I just ran right out of the classroom. Then the teacher gave our whole, like, you know, when the teacher, one kid does something, then she kind of just berates the whole class just, yep, so that one kid doesn't feel left out. I was that one kid that, mm-hmm, she yelled at the class because of.
Like,
so,
this is not what you do.
Yeah, yeah,
you,
yeah,
not run outside.
Yeah.
You did not obviously pay attention to earthquake etiquette and safety.
Yes.
By the way, I don't want to be ominous here, but we are 2 days away from 30 years of the Loma Prieta earthquake.
Really?
Yeah. October 17, 1989. So, sheesh. I mean, If you're alive then obviously, God, that's so weird to say too. But if, I mean, I know that you weren't then, but for me, I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And I always remember where I was. I was with my mom, and my mom took us shopping, which is like, why are we watching the World Series? Anyway, but I digress. But we were at JCPenney. I remember seeing part of the ceiling fall.
Wow.
And it's just crazy thinking about, that's been 30 years since that happened.
2 days away. Uh-huh. They actually had they made a 30 for 30 on it. I recommend anyone watches it. If you end up getting an opportunity, you should watch the 30 for 30 on the Loma Prieta earthquake and everything that surrounded it with the World Series. Okay. And yes, 510, we'll get to sports. And also from the 209, shout out to ROP. Yeah, shout out to ROP. That was one of the other schools that was kind of close to Irvington.
Oh, there you
shout
go.
Out to Fremont.
There you go.
Shout out to Fremont. So, last night with this Packers and Lions game, the thing that's really standing out, the Packers won by one, and they won off a field goal from Mason Crosby, who had the saddest Lambeau leap that I've ever seen. But with that game, though, came two storylines. One was a penalty. Two, another penalty. And they were illegal uses of hands to the face from the defensive lineman of the Detroit Lions. Now, I don't really want to bog down too much into how the game went, but when it comes to these penalties and just people arguing over how the game closed out because of said penalties, they're starting to use these penalties as an excuse as to why they lost. But it feels like whenever these sort of things happen, now, sure, they're big moments. And, I mean, you can look at the Rams and the Saints of last year, and that was obviously a completely missed call, and it should have been one. But also, there are certain situations which you say, you know what, they probably shouldn't have been in this predicament in the first place. Are you on that side, or are you on the side of, look, these refs need to get this call right because it's in the final moments of the game and they need to be on top of their game because, well, it could make or break it.
Well, this one was a hard one. So I didn't watch this one in real time, the actual two illegal hands to the face calls. They were both on Trey Flowers, who's never been called for that before. Looking back on it in slow-mo, one of them is kind of questionable, like it could go either way. The other one is a little more like, I don't know if I'd call that. I think, though, in all honesty, the Lions, I mean, you can't just kick field goals and expect to win all the time. And fortunately, we've seen that with the 49ers last year where they were, you know, that's how they tended to win games would be kicking field goals. You have to be able to convert in the red zone. You have to be able to score touchdowns in order to win games. And I think that that's what makes or breaks a good team at the end is being able to score that touchdown and get those points on the board. Because if you keep, you know, if you're going up against the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, you better be able to score touchdowns because you know that Aaron Rodgers is capable of doing that, even with two of his receivers out last night, with Davante Adams out last night. It's just, that's the thing. You have to be able to score. You have to be able to get the 6 to 7 points on the board.
It's all, exactly, and you mentioned it perfectly, is because it's all about Aaron Rodgers being in the game. You do not, I repeat, you do not want to give Aaron Rodgers any sort of chance in the fourth quarter. You got to be up on those guys. I know that's tough to say, but when you pick them off at the end of the third quarter and you're on their 43 to start out the fourth quarter and you only get a field goal because of it, those are the types of reasons that you lose football games. It just so happens that you had bad calls toward the end. Now, you had a chance to win, sure, but also, you got to score in certain situations where you have the opportunity to score, and scoring a field goal from there when you're on their 43, mm-hmm. it's just not going to work. And when you punt at the end of the game, right before you give the ball back to the Packers, that's the type of opportunity in which you need to score a field goal, because they would have won the game if they didn't punt. They just had an empty drive. That's all it was. And it's very annoying when we just look at these refs, these two calls, as to the reason why the Lions lost the game. Sure, it's a big factor into it.
Yeah.
It's a very big factor into it, but there are a myriad of reasons as to why the Lions ended up losing. They actually played a good game against the Packers by all accounts, and the Lions actually seemed to be a bit better than I thought a lot of people expected them to be. I think there were actually some who thought Matt Patricia, like, you know how I like lists.
Yep.
Big list guy. Big list guy, and coaches that were on that are expected to be on the hot seat going into this season before the season even started. And one of them was Matt Patricia. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, there are certain times too when Aaron Rodgers just did Aaron Rodgers things. And that's also a part you can account for the Lions' loss, is because Aaron Rodgers, when he gets into the fourth quarter, he tends to make these throws that are just unfathomable, some that make you kind of question your own quarterback. And speaking of which, for the 49ers, Jimmy Garoppolo, Brian Baldinger had some comments on Jimmy Garoppolo, which will be interesting to play a little later on in the show. We also got some stuff from Kyle Shanahan that we're going to play a little later on.
Yeah, and by the way, real quick, also, there was a call, I think they should, I mean, there was maybe a potential missed call on Kenny Galloway not getting that PI call. So mm-hmm. that's another one, too. You never know. It can go. It, unfortunately, it looks like the Lions were on the losing side of all these calls last night, which kind of stinks. And Matt Patricia, I think he's on the up and up right now. It looked like last year he might have just been only a coordinator. But I think he's a work in progress coach, that we could see some success down the road with him. But it does also make me think, last night watching Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and Tom Brady just tend to be those quarterbacks that if you leave them room at the end of the game, those quarterbacks will come back to haunt you in the end.
Yeah, anytime.
Is there anybody, like, who else is like that? I mean, that's something to think about. Chill not about a text line 95795. You know, do you feel that confident with Jimmy Garoppolo or Derek Carr? I don't think we're there yet.
Actually, believe it or not, I'm there. Well, I'm not all the way there, but if the Raiders are driving down the field in the fourth quarter and they need to get something from Derek Carr, seeing what he did against the Bears, and he's done this through his career. He hasn't been consistent. That's the issue with Derek Carr, is just he hasn't been consistent with throws that we know that he can make. But I think what's the stat? I think he leads in fourth quarter comebacks or something coming down to the wire. But also, you got to look at those stats too. He leads like all quarterbacks in fourth quarter comebacks or something in the past couple of seasons. But also, you got to look at it like, well, you have the opportunity to come back. That means you're down in the fourth quarter. A lot of these quarterbacks that you're ahead of, their teams aren't so always down in the fourth quarter like yours are. But Derek Carr is one who I actually have a lot of faith in to lead the team down the field in the fourth quarter. And Jimmy Garoppolo, he had the one opportunity. He hasn't had an opportunity to lead the quarterbacks down the field in the fourth quarter, or lead the team down the field in the fourth quarter to come back, except against the Steelers, and he was able to do that.
That
so,
was the one that I can remember. I was like, okay, I felt confident then. But yeah, Drew Brees, another one that you could see. He's somebody else you have little faith in when it comes to comeback. So there are guys out there, but that's not there aren't too many of them.
Yeah, there's not a ton. And there's not a like when you you know you're good when, say, with Aaron Rodgers too, there's that sentiment when you leave like a minute and a half on the clock, a minute 45. There are still some people out there who are saying, oh, they got too much time for him. They left way too much time for him to drive down the field, because some are just experts at the two-minute drill. Okay. Fantasy football frustrations. It is Tuesday, and we already got one from the 408 talking about Kerryon Johnson. We'll get to all of that, but feel free to text the Chilton Auto Body text line at 957-957-9570 if you have any fantasy football frustrations at all. This is a safe space. We're not here to judge. And also because Anna and I have a lot of fantasy football frustrations all the time. So really, it's just to make us feel better. But we're here to make you feel better about it, too, because you're not alone if you happen to lose in a fantasy football game due to poor coaching, which is why I lose all the time. We'll get to that next. We got some sound from Kyle Shanahan, Brian Baldinger, Adam Kaplan, all that coming up. Stephen Langford, Anna Kakanakis, and on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Chilton Auto Body text line 957-95-888-957-9570. It is Tuesday, and that means it's time to let out any and all of your fantasy football frustrations, because we're in that point now, Anna, where at least the league that I'm in, we have like a little group text and everything going around with it. We're at the point now in the season where the guys that are in like 11th or 12th or 9th or 10th, really, so 9th through 12th,
right,
they're just saying, there's no chance of me coming back. I'm not playing in this league next year. This stinks. We're already at that point now.
Oh, that's sad.
We're already at that point.
What happens to those people at the end there? It's like you want to make trades, but you also have to make it fair for everybody. And then you also, I don't know, you kind of feel bad because you want to make sure that they still put in their players and make it fair every week for everybody else who's, you know, kind of still in it.
Are you? I think we're about to take out kickers. Do you think kickers are even worth? Like, kickers are defense, it feels like nowadays. They're a part of the game and everything. They're a part of fantasy football. But in the end, I think kickers and defense, I'd be totally fine with taking them out and just adding two more position players just to make it a little more exciting. Because with kickers and stuff, you get certain ones who, you know, they're going to get you 10 to 15 a week. They could, but there's also ones who are just going to get you nothing. And there's defenses, for the most part this year, the only one who I'm seeing who's really having a big impact right now fantasy-wise are the Patriots. Mm-hmm. And other than that, it's hard to find like another great fantasy defense. The Bears are one, but then you saw their showing against the Raiders, and they didn't have a good one there. I thought the Ravens were going to have a good defense this year. It turns out, in fantasy-wise, they're not that great. But, yeah, I think we're going to take out kickers and defenses, though.
I will say, I picked up the Niners defense on waivers this week.
How?
They were available. All of a sudden, I'm looking like, well, I got the Bills. They're on a bye. What am I going to do? And I look, I'm like, Niners? Or I think because somebody dropped them because they're playing the Rams. And obviously, they didn't expect them to do well against the Rams. So I'm like, well, I'll pick them up.
Yeah.
So I picked up the Niners. Like, I'll start them this week. And look at that. I got 10 points from the defense. I understand they don't give you those points. They don't give you those big points, but I kind of like that element in there in the game because that's kind of those swing points,
right?
Which I know it can hurt at times, but I kind of like it in a way, having those. I don't know. The kickers maybe I could do without, but I like having the defenses in there because I think you kind of want that representation. Because, you know, they say defense wins championships. Well, obviously, if you take them out, then, well, it doesn't matter. It's all about offense here in fantasy football.
Yeah.
But I mean, look, here, my frustration, I'll tell you right now. I got Juju Smith-Schuster. And having going to their third string quarterback, yep, I had to bench that guy this week, unfortunately. And
wow.
Yeah, that just stinks right now. My team name is Happy Galladay to Juju, and my main player ain't playing.
Was he like, what? When did you draft him? Like in the second round? Third round, maybe?
I think second round, probably. Oof. I got him early, so I was like,
yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. I like, you know.
1 point. 1.2.
I didn't know what to do when watching the Chiefs-Texans game on Sunday because that was the early game that showed up before Niners-Rams was on in the afternoon. And in that game, I had Carlos Hyde. I have three different teams, and so this is all throughout like my different teams. This is what I had. I didn't realize how many Chiefs Texans players I had until like in all of my leagues until I actually watched this game. So I had Deshaun Watson, Carlos Hyde, and DeAndre Hopkins on the Texans.
Uh-huh.
So I had that. Didn't know what, and then and, you know, oh, screen pass to Duke Johnson in the end zone. That's how we're gonna score our points. And then with the Chiefs, I had Mahomes, Kelce, McCoy, and did I have anyone else? No, so I just had three players from each team, and really I just wanted it to be a slugfest. I wanted it to be 50. I wanted the over-under point total to be at least over 100 in this game.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, this just goes to show you what fantasy football does to football watching in general. Because Chiefs-Texans, you're supposed to go into that. I actually really enjoyed that game. I thought it was great because what the Texans were doing. But there's always in the back of your mind, like, my guys in fantasy aren't doing a single thing mm-hmm. right now. And with Travis Kelce, it feels different. He looks a little slower. I don't know what it is, but they haven't used him the same way this season. They haven't used him as a figured you'd use him as a primary option when Tyreek Hill was out, then Sammy Watkins was out. I figured they'd be using Kelce a little more, but they're using him more as a blocking tight end now, and they're getting him out there for passes. Obviously, he's going to score points, but he's not that kind of touchdown threat that you see from Travis Kelce normally anymore. I don't know what it is.
Well, it's not like George Kittle, who's always being used as a receiver. So you got somebody like him who's got tons of fantasy points when you have Kittle. I like this from the 925. In our league, we have five individual defensive players, not a team defense. That's kind of a cool way to do it. I haven't done that personally. I don't know how that would work. I mean, I'm guessing you get like sacks, tackles, pressures, things like that.
That's the thing is if you're going to have defensive players, I did that once where we had, instead of a team defense, we had three individual defensive players and we didn't put the scoring correctly. I think interceptions were worth more than a sack, for instance, which makes sense, but they were worth like much more. And when it came to scoring in fantasy, you figured, all right, like I'd pick up a cornerback, I'll pick up a safety. They're going to get these interceptions more than a sacks. Well, then you realize they never really happen. So it just seems like everyone picks up a defensive lineman and that's it. You got to have the scoring correctly on that. I'm not really big on playing with individual defensive players per se, because you just never know with fantasy football. Defenses are a whole different animal.
That's why I think the whole defense, having the team defense, is a good thing. I like having that element in there so that way you have that part of the game there, because it really, you see some of these games that you expect, you know, this team to just pummel another team. Just seeing it right now with the Niners, what they did with the Rams. You expected the Rams to score. The Rams had a poor offensive showing, and it's because of what the Niners defense did, and I think that's kind of a good way to almost recognize what they've done.
Let's skew it local. So if you had to choose between Matt Breida or Tevin Coleman, I think obviously with the Raiders, you're going to be starting Josh Jacobs regardless.
100%.
You got to. The one time I did not start him because I didn't think he was going to be that great, when Melvin Gordon came back, he ended up scoring 29 against the Bears. So you're obviously going to be starting Josh Jacobs, mm-hmm. but between Tevin Coleman and Matt Breida on the Niners, if you had to start one of those two at running back on your fantasy football roster, who would you start? Because it seems like right now, Anna, Matt Breida is that they start. Obviously, the first carry was with Tevin Coleman, but Matt Breida seems to be the guy that they consistently use. But they also seem to be splitting carries now, and Tevin Coleman is getting more of the red zone stuff. What do you think with Tevin Coleman and Matt Breida?
Well, so I have Matt Breida on my team right now, and he's capable of getting those long, you know, getting the yardage out there so you can get points that way. But Tevin Coleman gets more touches. So in a way, because it's a weird one, so he's like a week to week for me, depending on matchups and everything. I mean, when he had that 83-yard touchdown, obviously he went off that week and he had a great, great week for fantasy. But I would say it's a hit or miss, but I'd probably actually skew more towards Tevin Coleman because I think that Kyle Shanahan prefers to use him more over Breida.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at too.
It's a mix because it just depends. Because sometimes I think Brita's also capable of going off and just having these long runs that you get the extra yardage.
And after that 83-yard touchdown with Matt Breida, he didn't do much in these past couple of weeks. With the running game with the 49ers, that's an interesting one to watch out for because neither Matt Breida nor Tevin Coleman had that great of a game against the Rams. In the end, it just showed how much more the defense, how much better the defense was and how much of an impact they had on winning that game. But with the running backs, too, I mean, they both had 30-plus yards. And if you look at, say, the Lions running backs from yesterday against the Packers, Kerryon Johnson only had 34, and there wasn't another rusher who had 6. So really, it's just such a luxury to have both of these running backs on your team right now. If one of them has a bad day or both of them have a bad day, as far as just rushing the football compared to other teams, I mean, total yardage-wise, they're having a better day than a lot of teams running the football. Isn't that weird? You know, they're running the ball so much, yet if the two running backs don't have that great of a day, they're already doing better than some of these other teams. That's why they call it a two-headed monster right now. Even though they don't have that great of a game, they're still better as far as total rushing yardage than some other teams are.
What they've been able to do has been phenomenal. Here's the snap counts against the Rams. Tevin Coleman had 43, Matt Breida 28, Raheem Mostert 7. Obviously, Jeff Wilson didn't have any in that game. So it just goes through. These guys are, I mean, they're the workhorses for this team.
Yeah.
They're absolutely the workhorses. But you see, like, you know, some teams, it almost feels like they're not really getting that, they're not using as much of their running back. But you have somebody like Ezekiel Elliott who does so well, but they're still not, he's not still getting as many yards as, say, you know, this two-headed monster right now.
Yeah. You got two guys who, really, they could be starting running backs on most teams in the NFL if they were the sole feature back around there. But lo and behold, that's where I think we understand the 49ers are going to be going through the rest of the season. But Brian Baldinger had some comments on Jimmy Garoppolo looking ahead in the season. Want to get to those next, as well as what Kyle Shanahan had to say for his first media availability following the win over the Rams. Stephen Langford, Anna Kakanaki's in on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Man, I just watched these. We'll get to these comments from Kyle Shanahan in a second here, but as I watch these TV shows, these sports talk ones, and I noticed this on the pregame on NFL on Fox and the CBS pregame. I try and flip through anytime that I can, but they have a very tough time with standing still. They're not good at I feel like NFL on Fox, when I'm watching Michael Strahan, Jimmy Johnson, Terry Bradshaw, those guys, Howie Long, and I'm watching them, it's like a competition to see who could stand the most still, because they're all swerving, leaning from left to right, and I'm just like, are any of them ever just going to stand still and just stand there? I don't know.
Well, it might be just because they have to move, because it's so itching to always move and everything. But it's hard to just stand straight still. I'm one of those people that talks with my hands a lot.
Yeah.
So it's like I have a hard time keeping my hands still. I think that's the Greekness in me.
You know, watching people just stand in general is just awkward. I think they need to just move on from that whole format of having everyone stand, because they're not going to be able to do anything besides move from side to side. But I don't know. That's just something I noticed on the TV that kind of just veered us off.
I like standing in front of a desk. That's like one of the things I'll do. I like standing because then I could kind of like put my hands down. That's something I always like to do.
Right. Which is, yeah, that's fine. But, you know, it's
awkward when you're standing there and you get conscientious about how you're moving and what you're doing.
Yeah. And then you're just watching the TV and you're like, this is weird that they're just swaying from left to right.
I had to get up now.
All right. So Kyle Shanahan just gave a quick update on the injuries with the Niners in this last game. Here's Kyle Shanahan from yesterday.
For the injuries, DJ Jones ended up being a hamstring strain. He'll be questionable this week. He'll be day-to-day. Debo ended up with a groin strain. He's being the same boat as DJ. Kwan had a hand. He should be good to go at practice Wednesday. And Sherm with a stinger should be good to go also.
Look at this, Anna.
Go ahead.
A success finally, we don't have a player of importance who's going to be out for the next 4 to 6 weeks with some sort of injury. They have got, like, this is the first time it feels like this season, and they're 5-0 right now. And we know the injuries that they've been going through, but Shanahan going through those day to day, you love to hear day to day. Things are going to happen on the football field. It's a football game.
Inevitable.
It's very hard to, if you're playing for a lot of snaps and you're getting hit, there's a good chance that you could come away at least getting a little banged up, a little tweaked, but nothing too crazy right now. We can go into this next week against the Redskins knowing that still, obviously, we'll continue to monitor what happens with Staley and Witherspoon, which we'll get to in a second. But we know now that there are not any, as of right now, there are not any more players who are going to be out for multiple weeks at a time. We finally got an announcement like that.
And now I'm not going to fully exhale because I believe with the when did we get the Mike McGlinchey news? Was it on a Monday or a Tuesday? I want to feel like it was on a Tuesday that we got that news.
It was later.
When was that?
That was on a Wednesday.
It was on a Wednesday.
It was after the Monday night game. I don't think we did hear about it on Tuesday. We didn't know about that. That one was a complete mystery to all of us.
Mind you, again, they played on Monday night, so there's a difference there. So that came up on Wednesday. So if you do it to today, let's wait to today, make sure everything's okay, let them get back. I don't like to fully exhale just because I wait till they get a little bit closer to the game. But you're right. After, you know, seeing what's happened after losing four starters in 4 weeks, it's nice to be able to say, okay.
It feels like we haven't heard just this guy's day to day, this guy's day to day, and that's it. It feels like we've always heard this guy will be out 4 to 6 weeks. I can't really tell you any more than that. Like, that's it. That's it. I feel like we've heard that every single week going forward so far. Even from the start of the preseason, it feels like we've heard that. But now, they came away scot-free, really. I mean, obviously, you hear the groin injury, day-to-day, whatever. But that's bound to happen in the NFL. I just feel like hearing that, Kyle Shanahan with a little sense of relief in his voice that, hey, maybe we're not going to lose these guys for multiple weeks at a time.
And we're hearing now that some guys are going to be coming back pretty soon. So that's some good news. Like you mentioned, Akella Witherspoon, he had the foot sprain that he got on September 22nd in the game against the Steelers. He could be back as soon as October 27th against the Panthers. So we could see him returning fairly soon.
One guy who's actually also out, I mean, if we're going to look ahead to the Panthers, I mean, this Redskins game, I don't know if it's a quote-unquote trap game, as they put it, but going into Washington, they just got that. I mean, they're coming off a hot win against the Dolphins. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They could have momentum, Anna, going in to play the best defense in what I think is the best defense in the league right now. I mean, it's between them and the Patriots, obviously, but going into Washington, I mean, we're looking ahead basically to the Panthers. But I mean, do we overlook the Redskins at all? I mean, is it possible that the Niners are literally looking at this like these are one of the two tanking teams? Like, we don't even, like, this is just a blimp on the radar for us. I don't know what to make of that. We'll try and preview it as much as we can going forward ahead of Washington. But when you're looking at the Panthers, though, one guy who is back out on the practice field is Cam Newton. I don't know if Cam Newton's going to be back, seeing as how well Kyle Allen's done so far.
Do you put him back in? Would you rather face Kyle Allen or Cam Newton? Who would you rather face at this point?
Man,
right,
that's a conversation for a couple of weeks now. I mean, we still got till the 27th.
We got a little time. We got time to ponder. Let's see how it goes this week.
Yeah. But with Staley and Akella Witherspoon, though, who knows? Maybe they could have even come back sooner. It does not seem like, though, that they're going to need them in Washington, obviously. So give them as much time as they need to come back. And I think that what Emmanuel Mosley's done, what Justin School's done, can't go overlooked. I was very skeptical about what Justin School could bring. After the first week that he came back, I said, you know what, if Justin School had that good start, all right, but he needs to do this consistently for however long Staley's out. At the time, we thought 4 to 6 weeks, so we figured maybe he'd be in there for the next few games. Obviously, they went on a bye, so they had that 1 week off. But Justin School's been every bit as advertised way better than advertised. He gave up the sack, obviously, to Aaron Donald, but who hasn't done that as an offensive lineman? They haven't done anything really just to at least make you kind of you forget about you remember Staley, obviously, and you hope that he comes back, but they haven't given you any reason to be like, look, we need them back right now. They haven't given you any reason to do that so far. So I think what Emmanuel Mosley's done, what Justin Skule's done, can't go overlooked, and it won't go overlooked.
Okay, so Staley comes back. It sounds like, do you move Skule to the right side, or do you stay with Brunskill? I think you go with Skule, right? I mean, what do you think? I mean, that, I know it's a little bit different when it comes to left versus right, but is that kind of an interchangeable position?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends. I guess they'd have to, if McGlinchey's not coming back and Staley on the left side, you probably have to stick Skule on that right side. Otherwise, I mean, who else would be in there? I guess Brunskill would have to be your swing tackle. Then Sam Young would probably just be a healthy and active again.
Because McGlinchey's not expected to be back until at least November 11th versus Seattle. That's the earliest it looks like he could possibly come back. So you're going to have Joe Staley looking like he's coming back potentially on Halloween against Arizona. So that's what they're kind of looking like right now, because I know that's what they're aiming for, is to get him back for that game, which that game to me feels more like a trap game more than the Redskins game, just because of the mental factor of playing Arizona. You're going to Arizona right now, and Kyler Murray has improved a lot. So I think that to me is more of a trap game. Obviously, this weekend you're going to show up for this game, but in comparison, I think that feels more like a trap game.
Here's Kyle Shanahan speaking to the media yesterday, and we got a texter on the Chilton Auto Body text line saying from the 650, I hope the 49ers can stay humble and keep their foot on the gas. This Washington game could be a trap game. Well, here's Kyle Shanahan kind of telling you they're not going to take the foot off the gas.
Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, we sensed it going into the season. You know, I think we felt that in preseason. I think we knew we had a better team in preseason by the way practices went, by the way we were in games too, in the preseason games. But by no means do we feel we've arrived. I mean, there's lots of things we can do better, and we know teams are going to get better as we keep going. The main thing is that we do too.
Just held the divisional opponent Rams to 7 points, and Kyle Shanahan's keeping that mindset of they don't feel like they've arrived. That's what they have right now. Regardless of what you think of Jimmy Garoppolo, and we'll get to Brian Baldinger's comments in a second, but Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo have been around the game for a while now, and they've learned from the best. And you're seeing right now that there are raised expectations, but they're not going to get cocky. And a team that you look at that seems to be getting cockier anytime they win a game are the Cleveland Browns, and you look at the inexperience that they have there. But with Jimmy Garoppolo and Kyle Shanahan, Jimmy Garoppolo is still the leader of the team, regardless of what anyone thinks. He's still the quarterback, and he's still the guy who's going to be kind of – he's still that cliche monster out there in the interview world when he's just going to say, look, we're 0-0 right now. Every week we're going into this, we're 0-0. We're not going to think about the fact that we're undefeated, blah, blah, blah. But also, even though they are cliches, that is the kind of how they're preaching to the team, is that we don't want to go into this saying, oh, yeah, we're undefeated, so we're going to beat you. Like, they're going into it thinking, look, we can be defeated. It's our job to actually just keep the record going and not even try and think about that. That's really where they're at.
The other thing is that the offense has a lot of room for improvement. While the defense has been stellar, the offense has a lot of question marks around it. And it's because of the defense that they ended up winning those games. Yes, the offense made enough plays to get them the wins, but they still have a lot of work that needs to get done. It's still a work in progress, so that's why they cannot allow themselves to get cocky. Plus, hey, look right behind you. You got the Seattle Seahawks at 5-1 right now. So they're right there getting ready to try to take over as soon as you falter just a little bit.
Yeah, that game against the Seahawks is, I mean, you're not going to overlook any of these games coming up going into it.
Mm-mm.
Obviously, with the Cardinals and the Panthers and the Redskins, but that Seahawks game, that's one that any Niner fan should be excited to watch, because if only right now with the Niners and the Seahawks, Pete Carroll and Kyle Shanahan had as much of a rivalry with themselves,
like the Jim Harbaugh days,
as he did with Jim Harbaugh, because that all led back to USC and Stanford, and then it carried over into the NFL, and that's what made that Seahawks-Niners rivalry so great. Not just because they were two really good teams in the NFC West, but also because their coaches did not like each other. We're not going to get that sort of thing, but we are going to see what I think are the two best teams in the NFC West right now, who most would say that the Seahawks aren't. Sometimes would say the Seahawks, they have a 5-1 record, but also they've won on some pretty close games there, and they could have easily lost. The Rams, some people just don't discount the Rams because of Sean McVay and Aaron Donald and those guys, and Todd Gurley if he comes back. But with the Niners, I don't think there's anyone that's an NFC West fan who's saying that the Niners are below those guys right now.
No, it'd
be hard for me to imagine that.
Yeah, you can't say that right now, looking ahead, too. And gosh, that's a Monday night game, the Niners and Seahawks. I know we're looking way ahead here, but just the idea of that Monday night.
Yeah.
And you know what? Niners done obviously fairly well on Monday night.
So far, could they get their 50th win on that Monday night? That'd be an interesting one. Here is Kyle Shanahan continuing, talking about just the importance of getting that win in the division.
Yeah, I think that's one of the – we've struggled with a number of things in our first 2 years, but I would say that would be at least tied for the biggest one. I mean, if you don't win your division, no matter what you do, it's hard to ever have a chance at the playoffs, and the easiest way to get there is to win your division.
So I feel like – that has been, as far as just them struggling during the season against other teams, sure, but it does feel like in these divisional games that the other team has always had the upper hand.
Yeah.
Even the Arizona Cardinals last season, their only two wins came against the Niners. Now, that was with the Jimmy Garoppolo-less Niners, and right now you can't deny that he's the type of guy that's going to win them games so far, at least when he's under center. They've won, I forgot what their record is right now when he's under center with the Niners, but they've won a majority of those games. I think he's only lost once so far. So,
and he's undefeated at home.
Yes.
So at least that's a big thing that you have to, again, a lot of it has to do with the mental factor in these games and how you come in confident, but you don't want to come in cocky. So that's when it comes down to having that confidence from your quarterback to go out there and just feel like this team has a different confidence going out there and a different camaraderie than they've had in the past. And going out there, I think that's what's going to make the difference in the end.
Did you see that thing with George Kittle and Joe Staley?
I did.
On NFL Films? These guys' sense of humor is it's a weird one.
I love their sense of humor. Both of them.
Because the two that we've gotten so far, we got one last week with Nick Bosa against the Browns. And it was actually Richard Sherman who was on the mic, and Richard Sherman went to the sideline and basically said, like, was yelling at, well, pretending to yell, but not really, just yelling at like a guy. I think it was Buckner who batted down a pass and say, "You took my interception, man. That was going straight to me. I would have picked that off. That's why I made my career." And then Nick Bosa walks up to him and goes, "Hey, have you ever seen Ice Age? You're like that squirrel with the nut, and he tries to get it like that." Like
such a random,
you know.
Like,
and so you see that, and then you see the one this past week with George Kittle and Joe Staley just talking Canadian to each other for a minute and a half,
and then talking about how good looking Jimmy Garoppolo is.
And
his jawline.
It's like, what?
It is a nice jawline, I'll tell you. I'll be honest.
So in this game against the Rams, for one, the Niners had 17 opportunities to convert on third down, and they converted 8 of them. Here's Kyle Shanahan talking about that third down offense.
Well, I mean, I have been pleased with it. I mean, never satisfied. I want to continue to get better. But, you know, I mean, anytime you can run the ball 40 times in a game and you're only averaging 3 yards a carry, it means you got to get a first down somewhere. Doing that on third down and being able to do that, moving the chains, allows you to do that. So I think our guys have done a good job at that all year, much better than these past 2 years.
I mean, 8 for 17 on third down conversions. And, I mean, doesn't that seem like a lot, though, going for third down 17 times in a single game? The Rams were 0 for 9. Ooh. But also, I mean, if you're dominant offensively, I don't think you're going to be going for 17 different third downs. I think that just kind of shows how the offense actually performed against the Rams, which really was not up to their potential. It's not what we saw against the Cincinnati Bengals. It wasn't anything like that, where it felt like they didn't get any third downs at all. So right now, I mean, 17, is that sort of, Is that the kind of thing that's a cause for concern, or is, I mean, they were able to convert 8 of them. So, I mean, just a little less than half, but is that any cause for concern at all?
To me, the biggest concern would be that first number if they weren't converting. So the fact that they were able to convert was the biggest thing. I understand where you're going with that. Yeah, having to get the third down 17 times, it is a lot having to do that. And you should be able to move the chains a little bit more, get that extra yardage. But at the same time, being able to convert, that's a good thing. So I think this last game was, there were flashes of good offense, but it just wasn't as consistent. And where we've seen against, obviously with the Bengals, that's where they had a lot of consistency when it came to having great offensive plays. But it kind of felt like a mesh between a few games. You know, you've had some of the downward, you know, things with, obviously, with Jimmy Garoppolo turning the ball over 2 times, and then you had the drop passes. But if they made those catches, you know, you have Tevin Coleman, you have Marquise Goodwin, you have those catches that were made, that would have also changed the offense a little bit too.
Yeah, and I think Jimmy Garoppolo, though, it just shows that he didn't have that great of a day passing. I mean, he was 24 for 33 with 243 yards, which looks really good. But then you have passes like the one to George Kittle, in which he's just getting the ball at the 30-yard line and then just mauling over to the 5-yard line. But one guy who was on the station yesterday was Brian Baldinger. If you do not know who he is, he does those Baldy breakdowns on Twitter. I highly recommend you follow him if you get a chance, because he does great breakdowns on any team around the NFL. But for one, he talked about Jimmy Garoppolo, and he had some interesting comments on him.
I don't think he's there yet, but, you know, he's 5 games into this thing and a couple games of preseason. I mean, he's just, you know, it's just a year now since he's been out of commission. So I think he's still rounding out into form.
So they asked him the question if he's actually – this might be a little ahead of everything, and we're looking way ahead here. But is Jimmy Garoppolo a playoff quarterback? And Brian Baldinger just right there said, I don't think he's there yet. Do you think he's going to get there during the season, or do you even need him to get there? Because it seems like right now the defense is going to do whatever they're going to do what they need to do, and they're going to give Jimmy Garoppolo opportunities to win in the end. But I mean, is there anything right now where you're thinking, okay, I mean, we're going into week 7 here, and Jimmy Garoppolo just hasn't looked like that franchise quarterback just yet? He's been getting the wins, but he hasn't had that sort of, damn, that was a good game by Jimmy Garoppolo. We haven't really had that yet.
We haven't, but he will need to be playoff ready. We can't just depend on the defense right now, because you look around the rest of the league and the top teams, obviously the Patriots, you have a great quarterback. In Tom Brady, you have a great defense out there. And looking around, the guys who are top right now, Drew Brees will return eventually for the Saints. The Saints are a really good team. You got even Seattle right now, Russell Wilson, he's a good comeback quarterback. Aaron Rodgers, you've got big guys who are really good quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes with the Chiefs, even though they don't have, you know, they've lost the last two. The fact that you have dependable quarterbacks who can move the ball and get you those points on the board, that's huge, especially because once you get into playoff football, that defense tightens up and it's a lot harder to score.
You know, it's interesting with Jimmy Garoppolo and how we view him. We view him under this microscope because you're naming these players, you know, Drew Brees, mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes, and we try and kind of compare what he's doing to the best quarterbacks in football. But also, I think we got to do better, and me personally, I got to do better at this too. Because we could be critical of him all we want. We look at all these numbers, but comparing him to any of these worst quarterbacks in the NFL right now, you would have Jimmy Garoppolo over a solid percentage of any of these starting quarterbacks going right now. Because we just view them under such a – since they're local, we view them under just such a microscope. And anytime he makes a mistake, then it's just we – take that into account, and we act like that's his identity, because we're watching this quarterback closer than any other quarterback in the NFL. But we also watch the best quarterbacks too in football. So we always try and compare Jimmy Garoppolo and give him this sort of ceiling. And I don't think that, and right now we just don't even need to compare him to the greats here. We don't need to say, hey, he needs to be this kind of guy. He needs to be the Drew Brees. He needs to be the Aaron Rodgers. He needs to be the Tom Brady. We don't need to do any of that. But, I mean, you just look at these bottom-of-the-barrel quarterbacks right now. I mean, you look at what's going on with the Dolphins. You look at what's going on with the Bengals. You look at what's going on. I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks right now who are actually hurt, and we got a lot of backups going on. But there are plenty other. I mean, you look at Matt Ryan. He hasn't had that great of a season so far, and the Falcons are still. They only got one win so far in the season, and Matt Ryan's supposed to be an MVP caliber type quarterback. So are there guys that we compare to Jimmy Garoppolo? But I'd have him over a lot of starting quarterbacks right now.
I agree, but I think the other thing is that because he was with the Patriots and because he was behind Tom Brady, that's why we have him under a microscope even more.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it comes down to.
With him and Bill Belichick, there's a lot of pressure we put on the guy. And I think this season, with what the defense has done going into week 7, I mean, there's not really a point in trying to compare him to these guys right now. There really isn't. If you're expecting him to be that, you don't need him to be that. I mean, look at what the Patriots are doing right now when you got Tom Brady and that defense performing. It looks like they're unstoppable right now, but like you don't need your team to be the Patriots. You need your team to be where it's at right now, and that's at 5-0. And think about that. I mean, you lose 11 straight, then you're 5-11, which still, like, on the grand scale of things, that would be terrible, obviously, but it's not going 3-13 or 2-14. That's just where the team's at right now. So it's interesting. We'll try and compare, I think, more to like just quarterbacks that you don't want, you know? I think that's where we got to start putting Jimmy Garoppolo right now, because comparing to the best, he's obviously not up there with the best right now. But
He
could get there.
But it takes time.
But also, you'd rather have him more than a lot of quarterbacks right now. Okay. Michael Lombardi coming up at 8 o'clock. Terrell Owens at 8:30. Mike Silver at 9:05 with Joe Lowe and Dibs. Thanks for tuning in with us, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow at 5 a.m. Joe Lowe and Dibs coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.